98.1 KZE Echo and the Bunnymen. It's the Up and Running Morning Show. And joining us now live in the studio is our friend, our neighbor, and a novelist, Tony Fletcher. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Rick. So lovely to hear Echo and the Bunnymen there in the Killing Moon.
Yeah.
A great intro. Absolutely grooving on hearing that again.
Well, I figured that has some kind of connection to your past.
It does. It does. Not only was the first book I ever wrote the Echo and the Bunnymen biography, but naturally, in that case, they show up in the new book more than once.
Yeah, well, a little while back, you came and visited. You had, a bunch of times you've been here, I should say.
A couple of times,
I can't even remember the last time. It's a very frequent time that you're here. And you write some very important books, some very cool biographies, I should say. Yeah. You've done Keith Moon and Echo Wilson, and the Bunnymen.
And indeed Wilson Pickett, whose picture is up there on the computer because we just played him as well. Yeah, yeah.
So it's been a lot, an in-depth look at music through your entire life. And this is a memoir that's coming out. So it's autobiographical.
It is autobiographical. Memoir distinguishes from autobiography in the sense that a memoir is maybe more about a place in time, a moment in time.
Okay.
And it can be written a bit more prosaically, maybe. You can take a couple more liberties with a memoir than an autobiography. So when you read a rock star autobiography, it's kind of like, I was born, I lived, you know, this is my story to now. This book is a sequel to a memoir I had come out over 10 years ago called Boy About Town, which just took me through my like childhood in London, but starting my fanzine, falling into the music world. And I left it on a bit of a cliffhanger, and after 10 years... The sequel finally comes along, and it finds me as a 16-year-old, like really sort of starting out in the music business.
Wow.
And having a sort of ringside, not even ringside, because I was involved, like an insider view of this period when, essentially, as the subtitle says, UK punk went pop. So it's partly memoir, but it is also more so than the first memoir, largely music journalism. Because I'm doing or making a lot of observations about what I'm seeing going on around me within the British music world.
So as part of the music industry in the British music world and finishing this book, what have you learned from all this 40 years ago?
I've learned that most of the acts I wrote about are, if not still going, they're back. Because somebody asked me, like, hey, when you were hanging out with Madness when you're 16 and got sent on the road with them on your first journalistic assignment, did you think Madness would still be around? I'm like, hell no. You know, we were all kind of like waiting. You know, like. Pete Townsend had said that The Who ought to break up when punk came along because he'd turned 30. So I learned that. I have learned that music is more, I think we can see it now as a career, not a flash in the pan. If you handle it right, it can be a career. And I learned that, as everybody should be fortunate enough to say, and I think a lot of people can say this, I feel I lived through interesting times. And I'm really glad of the experiences I had watching as the acts that were emerging from punk and starting to experiment musically, actually sort of, some of them organically and some of them very consciously, shifted towards a more popular, chart-friendly, radio-friendly sound.
So at the time, you yourself started a record label with Paul Weller of The Jam?
Yeah, that's pretty much the start of the book. I had this fanzine Jamming going since I was 13, and he had we'd befriended each other somewhat. I mean, I'm careful about that because although there was a sort of big brother mentorship cool thing going on, it's not like I ever had his home number. His address was like closely guarded.
Yeah,
but he did say along the way, you know, I think you'd be like, I would love to put some of my money into an independent record label, something with my what I've got. I think you'd be great to run a label. So in the summer of 1980, in the summer of 1981, after a year of discussion. So actually the label doesn't start up straight away in the book. The idea has come up in the summer of 81. I get given a little cubbyhole office in the Jam's suite of offices and left to run the label.
Basically then, as the label, you're the A&R man. So you were out scouting bands before, you know, they blew up, really.
Well, that was the aim. We only put out three different bands on the label, a couple of singles each. An Irish band called Rudy, who had been an important original sort of punk but quite poppy band, and a band from England. There is an American group with the same name called Zeitgeist. Uh-huh. Who had a bit more funk to them. And then it had always been the plan to put out my own band when we were ready, as Paul said. And my band was called Apocalypse, and we had a single, and then we toured with the Jam right up until their last show.
How'd you describe Apocalypse and the music you played?
The music we were playing then was a sort of punk mod reggae. We were three white kids, but we'd gone to school in Brixton, and we could not help, and we loved the sound of reggae. And I think we actually had it down reasonably well. Mm. It would show up in different ways. So there was this sort of mod feel. Like when Paul Weller produced our single, it came out sounding very, very much like the Jam, which was kind of funny because he'd chosen a song written by my bandmate because he thought all mine sounded too much like the Jam. So that was kind of interesting. But we had stuff that was more reggae based and maybe a bit more funk based as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So from 1980 through 1984. Mm-hmm. That was pretty explosive time. I mean, there was a lot going on culturally and pop-wise. A lot of movies that have indelible marks to this day, and albums that came out in that time where my kids say, so what was it like in the 80s when all this music and all these movies came out and all this cultural amazing stuff happened? And I said, well, it was before phones, so maybe that was it, but still, it was an explosive time.
It really was an explosive time. It was before phones.
Yeah.
But you raise an interesting thought that it wasn't before synthesizers.
Huh.
And one of the big shifts that we find in the book is when a number of the bands discover, like, you know, keyboards are improving and coming down in price. Huh. And so one of the big shifts you see is, like, I'm starting out writing about the Jam, Madness, you know, Echo and the Bunnymen, and a lot of indie groups whose names may or may not be known, the Au-pairs, Delta Five, Scritti Politti. And then suddenly, like, people like Depeche Mode, Soft Cell come along and explode with these really great pop songs that nobody can deny. Obviously, Tainted Love is a cover. but it's still uniquely,
but that keyboard sound.
Yeah, it's brand new sound.
Yeah,
and I think the one example I take time out to talk about is the Human League, because I had seen them when they were this, you know, very interesting avant-garde trio. I saw them at the Marquee Club. You know, their debut single was called Being Boiled. It was about silkworms. It's very obscure stuff. And then they broke up into, you know, like two of them left and formed Heaven 17. Phil Oakey found two girls on the dance floor. They were 17 years old on the dance floor in a club in Sheffield. He had a tour to do in 2 weeks, took them on tour. But a year later... they're releasing the greatest, you know, synth pop album you can imagine called Dare, and it's conquering America. And what happens is, the acts I just mentioned realize there is money in America, you know, and MTV starts. So there is now more of a shift from the British groups towards, there's money to be made elsewhere as well. And that's an interesting time.
Like Adam and the Ants.
Well, thank you. That's actually the first example I used before the Human League. So actually, thank you for raising that, because I had interviewed Adam right when I started my fanzine. I'd seen them when 1978, when they were a punk band. And a punk band that the media wouldn't touch. They were arty punk singing about, basically about BDSM a lot of the time. Yep. And all of a sudden, Adam Ant's on there on Top of the Pops with his face made up in this war paint and doing amp music, and little girls are screaming at him. And he embraces that wholeheartedly. And it's very hard for the punks to take because half of them have leather jackets with Adam and Yaks on the back of it that they now have to paint over. But I think that, you know, somewhere down deep, a lot of other acts looked and said, well, if he can do it, maybe we can do it, and maybe we can do it a little bit better.
But with the help of the brand new synth sounds, things took on a whole different dimension, from rock and roll jangly guitars to all of a sudden syncopated grooves that had rhythm with a drum machine.
Yeah, they did. And of course, there's enormous variety in there, Rick. I use Scritti Politti as a good example in the book, because after being one of the most willfully indie, left-wing, obscure DIY of all Rough Trade, which is a record label, groups, they reemerged. It was mainly Green Gartside, who is back right now with new music, with a song called The Sweetest Girl in early 1981 that embraced this new kind of sound. And it left a lot of people on that indie scene saying, wow, that's a great song. And we had been sort of anti-songs for a while because we were busy restructuring, you know, music.
Music, yeah. Deconstructing.
Deconstructing and then restructuring. And yet this is a great song. Mm. And I use that as an example in there. Yeah, you get syncopation. I mean, towards the end of the book, Wham! Come Along. I think what Paul Weller did with breaking up the Jam, like as a Jam at their peak, had a double number one, meaning a double A side with a Town Called Malice and Precious. Precious was a real funk workout. Great but he song. Then wanted to break up the band and form the Style Council so that he could have all those little synths and trumpets and drum machines and really kind of like do what he wanted. So there is a big variety out there for
sure. The Style Council was a cool band though after the Jam. It was a great musical melodic band.
Yeah. I'll give you that. I think it's hard for some Jam fans to take.
True.
But there is a lot of really good music out there that's endured. Long Hot Summer, My Ever-Changing Moods, songs like that. You're the Best Thing. Yeah.
Tony Fletcher is our guest. He has a new book coming out on August 18th called Pow, When UK Punk Went Pop, 1980 through 1984, a memoir by Tony Fletcher. You have a couple of dates coming up, one at the Orpheum in Saugerties, and this is going to be a cool event. Tell the folks what's going to happen.
Sure. I love working with the Orpheum. I've done some sort of presentations.
A bunch of cool things there. Yeah.
I've done events on the Smiths and R.E.M. and Keith Moon, all of whom I've written books about. Mm. And so we're going to launch up there. And the lovely thing about working with the cinemas, they have a screen. So I'm going to show some videos from the era because nobody needs to hear me talk for too long. And additionally, Stephen Blush, who's a well-known author himself, has been running around a magazine for years. He's written books like When Punk Went Reggae, I think, might be the right title. And he made the film American Hardcore, which is an excellent movie about the hardcore genre. He's coming up from his area to host an In Conversation with me.
Oh, cool.
Obviously, books will be on sale just a couple of days ahead of publication. Very and cool. 2 p.m. And we'll be carrying on afterwards at the Inquiring Minds bookstore next door, because the cinema obviously has to get on with movies. So people still want to chat. We'll do that. Yeah.
Like after show hang.
But the mid-afternoon after show hang, because we're older now.
Yeah, we like that. At the bookstore, coffee house.
Yeah.
Also, 2 p.m. at Stony Kill Coffee House in Chatham, and that's coming up shortly thereafter. What's the date on that?
That's the following Sunday, on Sunday the 23rd. I just figured it might be really good to have an option. You obviously want to send everyone to your launch event, but not everyone can make it. So the event on the 23rd, it calls itself Stony Kill Coffee, but it's actually a coffee house come bookshop come record shop. And it seems like everybody in there is a musician, so I figured why not do an event there. That'll also be at 2 p.m. with Dusty Wright hosting the In Conversation.
Well, that should be great as well. So growing up through the 80s, Do you have any takeaways of it from your own experiences that were indelible?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to underplay actually how rough Britain was at the time. And I think Americans sometimes, they might have a rose-tinted view of England. But it was still the, if not more so, the England, the London of, you know, punk 77 that the Clash sang about a lot. The streets were dangerous. The government didn't care. This was the Thatcher government that got elected in 79 and stayed in power in one way or another for 17 years. Unemployment reached a high of 3 million in a country of only 50 million. That's including, you know, all your children and retirees. And in 1981, there were very serious riots up and down Great Britain. And the special song Ghost Town hit number one at the peak of that, which was very apposite, I think is the word. The book doesn't continue to mention, don't believe it mentions the miners' strike in 84.
Wow.
But there was there was a lot that went on that the country was wrestling with what it was going to become.
Wow.
Really wrestling with it. And somehow out of that, you know, we've always had music in the UK. I mean, some people say it's because of the weather. There's a bunch of reasons, but we've always had the music. And I think what was great about that post-punk era was it wasn't just being like people like the Gang of Four who made really interesting angular guitar music, but there were these duos like Soft Cell. There were these brand new groups like Depeche Mode who actually went out and gigged before they got a record deal, but with synthesizers. And there were people who were like pushing at the envelope, because in a way that's what the government was telling them to do, was like, there's no jobs for you, just, you know, they were saying go be an entrepreneur. So a lot of people were like, all right, we'll go make records, you know.
Well, Tony Fletcher, it's a pleasure to have you here in the studio. I am looking forward to reading through POW, When UK Punk Went Pop, 1980 through 84, a memoir by Tony Fletcher. Tony, is the book going to be available everywhere?
It's available everywhere that people will want to get it. The publisher is Trouser Press Books, and you must know, remember Trouser Press magazine.
I did.
And Ira Robbins, who set that up before I set up Jamming, he set it up in the early 70s. He's decided rather than a quiet retirement, he's going to run a great publishing company. The book is available everywhere that you would want to get it. It's properly distributed. Of course, you know, a lot of people do get them online, but your bookshop can order it. Yeah. I always encourage people to use an independent bookshop. And if you can't get to an independent bookshop, use something like bookshop.org that gives part of its income to independent bookshops.
Well, when I asked if it's available everywhere, that's exactly what I meant.
Yes.
And Oblong Books will probably have it. Gold Notebook will probably have it. And all the other excellent independent bookstores. A New Leaf in Pine Plains.
Yeah, hopefully they all will, especially if they're listening. And also, like that shout out to Trouser Press. They have their own website, mailorders@trouserpress.com as well. Cuts out the middleman, but I'm very happy if people want to support their independent bookshop. You'll notice there are names I am not mentioning here. And that is very, very conscious on my part. I don't care if I'm lower down their chart. It does not bother me at all.
We appreciate you being here. Tony Fletcher, our guest. Pick up the book when it hits the shelves on August 18th. Get a sneak peek and get it before it's available everywhere. And go see Tony at the Orpheum in Saugerties this Sunday at 2 p.m. So it's early enough to get, you know, dinner later on and enjoy the entire day. Thanks, Tony, for being here.
Thank you, Rick.
It's the Up and Running Morning Show on 98.1 KZE. We'll be back in a flash.